if you're starting, you have to start raising capital from day one. At least tell people what you're doing. In my limited experience, that's what's happened. People seen what I was working on without me telling them that I needed capital.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Mauricio Roque is a professional real estate agent in Southern California with over 7 years of experience. He started his multifamily investment journey in 2019, and since then, Mauricio has traveled across the U.S. to identify investment opportunities, meet brokers, lenders, and has developed a solid network of professionals ready to take on the next investment. His goal is to help his friends grow their wealth and build a retirement plan through apartment investing. Mauricio, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sam. Very happy to be here.
Hey, man, the pleasure's all mine. You know, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on the show. Can you briefly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yes, absolutely. Well, I do residential real estate. So real estate is something that I've always been attracted to. I love my clients. I become friends with my clients. I love what I do. I love giving them the keys to their first home. The problem is, after you do that, you drive home. It's an amazing feeling, Sam. Sometimes I've been driving home and the sun is setting. And then I think, wow, it's a great feeling, but tomorrow I'm unemployed. I have to start again, right?
Right.
And so that's part of the reason that I began, because I started thinking, how can I have some type of passive income? What if there was a way that I could sell one time, but I could keep getting paid multiple times for that one transaction? I just didn't know how to do it. So after a lot of research, I started learning about multifamily.
Right, right. Very cool. When did you decide to take the plunge to bigger assets?
That was in 2019 after one of my clients, I helped him purchase a triplex, and it was a really nice property, a new water heater, it was tankless water heater, new roof, new paint, new windows, etc. So the moment they bought it, this is a true story, a month later, one of the tenants didn't pay. So guess what happened to the cash flow? And that tenant didn't pay for about 3 months or 4 months. So it completely killed their cash flow. So I started thinking, what if instead of three units, if there was 10, then the vacancy, if there was one person out, wouldn't hurt as much. So that kind of got me thinking, maybe there's a way that I could somehow partner up with people and purchase a larger asset. I had no idea what syndications was. It was just in my head thinking, somehow there's got to be a way for people to be able to do this.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. It is a mystery, you know, and when you're on the outside looking in, I don't think most people understand how these deals get done.
Exactly. I mean, you drive by these large multifamily assets and you just wonder, hey, this is a corporation that owns. So you never really think that it could be just your regular mom and pop that started 4 or 5 years ago investing in smaller properties and then ended up building to this level.
Right. No, man. Shoot. I was living in an apartment 10 years ago. And yeah, I never gave it one thought. In my mind, it's all big money from Wall Street, which a lot of it is. But
yeah,
from Wall Street that, you know, has billions to blow and they own these apartment complexes and, you know, and you just don't think much about it until you start realizing that this is available, you know, for everyday investors.
Exactly. And I think one of the challenges that I had is every time I held an open house, not every time, but a lot of the times I would have that one person walking in, they were just coming in to look at the house and they would say, I own 12 rentals, I own 8 rentals, et cetera, et cetera. When did you buy? I bought it in 1986. I bought it for $138,000 and the house is $700,000 now. Well, that's great, but that doesn't apply to me. I need to know something that applies to me that I can do now. I mean, there's no way I can find anything in Orange County for under $700 at this time. So it doesn't apply. So I needed to find that one product that could allow me to take part in these larger assets.
Right. So what has been that journey?
Well, I started in 2019. It took me a while to identify the right market. And when I did, I started working really hard in that market. I was flying out there, driving out there once every 3 weeks. I would leave my house at 3 a.m., come back at 9 p.m. I would meet brokers, meet lenders, meet property managers, you name it. And I started submitting offers, started submitting at least one offer per month, if not two. But I just kept getting crushed in that market. No matter how hard I tried, I just couldn't make the numbers work. So after about 6 months, 5 or 6 months in that market, I started thinking maybe I should look somewhere else. I spoke to my coach and he said, hey, maybe you should look in markets that are not the top 10, right? The most competitive, where you're competing against people that have just millions and millions of dollars to burn. So I started looking at a different market. This was in 2020, February, and I was able to get an offer accepted on March 3rd of 2020.
Congrats. Right
Yeah, thank you. It's a great feeling at the moment. Little did I know that the next week, entire country was going to be on lockdown.
Right.
Yeah. So at that point, it was very difficult to keep going with the deal because the seller has some issues. If you remember, Sam, back in those days, March, April of last year, no tenant wanted an inspector to go into their unit and then the next neighbor's unit and the other unit, right? So we couldn't travel as well for due diligence. So it became very complicated at that point. Even lending changed. If you recall, lenders suddenly start asking for reserves, right? 6 months of reserves. And then we just couldn't make the numbers work. It was a very difficult decision after all that hard work to have to let the deal go. Very, very tough. So we decided that it wasn't going to work. It wasn't in our investors' best interest. So we decided to pull out of that deal at the end of April.
Wow. I'm sorry to hear that. It's really disheartening when you've worked that hard to get anything moving forward. And then when you finally feel like you've identified the asset, you've got an accepted, maybe even PSA at this point, and you're going, I got to walk.
Exactly. And I think the toughest part is that the numbers worked great at first. When I first plugged all the numbers, it was an incredible deal. And we had the funds to close. Everything was in place, except that it's something that was completely out of our control. So at this point, we just couldn't make it work. We just had to make that decision. And the challenge was, what do we do now? I mean, now I can't even travel anymore. Now we don't know what's happening with lending. Now we don't know if they continue asking for reserves, will we be able to make a deal work? And at the time, the other challenge was, you would hear a lot on podcasts and a lot of webinars that, you know, properties are going to be discounted in October and so forth. But that, I mean, I'm in real estate. That's not going to happen.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I knew it wasn't going to happen. I mean, if somebody owns that type of asset, they're going to hold on to it. So it was just very challenging at that point.
Right. So what did you do moving forward? What has the process been like?
Well, after that, I mean, we just had to cut our losses. I was stuck with thousands of dollars in attorney fees and just a tough learning experience. But the biggest challenge was I can't travel. I can't fly out. My daughter had just been born. So my daughter was 2 months old and I couldn't risk getting in a plane. So I started networking like, I mean, I've never done this before. I would jump on sometimes up to 8-12 networking calls per week during the lockdown. Wow. Because I thought I can't be watching the news. I can't be on social media. Everything's just so negative. So my only escape was podcast and webinars and Zoom calls, like networking events. And through those events, after months and months of, I mean, I spoke to people that were all the way in Alaska. I mean, upstate New York, everywhere. And I finally found a partner that was in one of the markets that I had identified. And we start working together then.
How are you going to fund the acquisition that you put under contract in February of 2020?
We were raising capital from friends and family. We had some capital ourselves. I had found some business partners that had some, they were doing flips in the past and they were just sick and tired flips. They were putting $100,000, $150,000 and walking away with $6,000-$7,000 because there's just the spreads are so thin.
Right.
So it was really easy for them to look at multifamily and say, I want this to be my next investment. I mean, so we had roughly about half ourselves and we had the other half from friends and family and colleagues.
Gotcha. Okay. That's very cool. Was that a tough, because that was your first deal. So was that tough getting capital lined up for that deal?
Not for the first one. For the first one was actually fairly easy. I think for the last one, the one that we closed, that was a tough one. And it was a mistake on my end because the original investors from the first deal, I didn't stay in good communication with them. And almost a year went by. So that was a mistake on my end. And that's a hard lesson learned.
Yeah, because their capital position may have changed.
Oh, exactly. I mean, I have clients that had lost their businesses, that had closed their businesses, and now they needed the capital. I had people that went and bought other properties. I had friends that bought property in Arizona and different states. So at that point, I mean, the capital from 100%, it dropped down to about 30%.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Cool. So let's fast forward. So you had you know, the deal fell apart in April. You had a tough few months trying to figure out what, you know, how to rebrand or reposition your business such that you can go back into acquisition mode. And then how did you get your next property under contract and then, you know, get it now, I guess, across the finish line?
Yeah, well, we had another property. It was a smaller property with the business partner that we now have. We looked at that one. It was a smaller deal. We were going to do a joint venture, but towards the middle of the process, we realized that the finances the seller was providing did not match the records at all. And our lender said, hey, you know what, Mauricio, I care about you guys. And I can tell you that you're not going to find any lender that will finance this property. So I think it's in your best interest to walk away from this one. So we ended up walking away from that one. That was an easy decision. It was just simply a financial decision. And shortly after that, a couple months later, there was word that there was a group of people, like, which was us, that was trying to actively and aggressively purchase a property. And then one day I got a call from a seller directly and said, hey, are you still interested in my property? I had put an offer in his property several months before. I said, yes, sir, I am. We did the numbers. And within a week, we had it under contract.
Oh, that's really cool. Good for you. Good for you. So from your first day, you said, hey, man, I am going to invest in multifamily until you got a deal closed was how many months?
From the day that I made the decision in my head, that was March 17th, 2019. That's when I called my wife from a conference and I told her I found a way for us to spend more time together and I found a way for us to create passive income. The day I closed was March 12th, 2020.
2020 or 2021?
2021, sorry.
right. Yeah. Wow. Good for you, man. I mean, and that's one of the things that I think people overlook is just sometimes it takes a lot of determination and sticking with it to get it done. You know?
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I mean, I hear a lot of stories of folks that have 3,000 units, 5,000 units, and it's great. I mean, it's very motivating because it shows you what's available in this industry. Right. But at the same time, I wanted to hear somebody that was trying to get started in the middle of a pandemic because that's where I was. And I wanted to hear their challenges. So I started attending, like I said, a lot of networking events. And after attending a lot of networking events, I started meeting people that were also on the same boat as I was. Right. And we would encourage each other. We would give each other tips and so forth. And that really, truly helped the focus remain where it should be. And it really helped us to keep pushing towards the goal.
Right. No, I love that. I love that. Was there any bad advice or, you know, stuff that you were told along the way that you kind of had to tune out?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the worst advice that I got was a couple of people told me you just need to find the right deal and the money will come. And I heard that. See, judging by your laugh, I know that you probably heard this a number of times. Yeah, I mean, that's something that they tend to tell you in the industry. Find the right deal. When the deal comes, there's plenty of money. All this money will flow. And it's not how it works. You have to be actively looking for a deal and you have to be actively raising capital or find a partner to do that, the second part. But they go hand in hand. You can't find one without the other.
Right. No, absolutely not. Yeah. I don't know who started that myth, but it is just that. You know, you can have an excellent deal, but if you don't have the investor base to get it done.
Exactly. Maybe when you get to a point where you have a big portfolio and you have a solid business 3, 4, 5 years, and you have a big base of investors, that's probably a different scenario, right? You bring a deal to the table, you already have people lined up. But if you're starting, you have to start raising capital from day one. At least tell people what you're doing. In my limited experience, that's what's happened. People seen what I was working on without me telling them that I needed capital. And that's how I've gotten some calls and that's how I've gotten some investors. Just simply, they see what I'm doing. They see it on social media and they call and they want to know.
Right, man, that's cool. That's cool. If you could do something differently in your journey, what would it be and why?
That's pretty easy. I would have started networking since day one. I think the first market that I was working on, I was doing it on my own. And it was tough. I mean, you celebrate the wins on your own, which is boring because it's just you. And when days are not necessarily the best, there's no one that you can talk to see what you could do better, how you can adjust your strategy or make some changes. So I was doing everything on my own. It wasn't until about February that I started networking a little bit. And it wasn't until June of last year. That's when I started networking a lot. And now networking has become a part of my every day or every week life. I talk to people, not necessarily thinking I'm going to get something out of it. I just talk to people because I want to, because I want to talk to people with the same mentality, with the same goals. So that's what I would definitely do different.
Yeah, I was going to ask, you know, what do you find are the benefits of being so heavily involved in networking?
Well, I think I've talked to people before that have attended a networking call. And I remember I talked to one of my friends and she said, well, I didn't find a partner. And I said, it's one call. I mean, try 5 months later after attending these calls every week. I think the benefits mainly is that you could potentially find a good business partner. But my personal benefit was just staying focused, because, you know, the world can be beautiful, but it can also be pretty bad sometimes when everything that you hear is just politics or COVID, et cetera, et cetera. So to me, that was an escape. That was a way where I would connect with people and no one was talking about that. Right. All they care was about getting to their next asset.
Right. Yeah, that is a refreshing environment to be in, where you can drown out all the negativity and say, all right, we're all moving in a direction that is positive for us and for the world. So that's certainly an environment to be in.
Yeah, exactly. And also, if anyone from our group, from one of the many networking events that I attend, if anyone got an offer accepted or did anything to move the needle forward, we all celebrated and we all genuinely enjoyed it, because we all knew how hard that person had been working. So overall, it's very encouraging. Even if people don't have the experience, I would recommend that's the best way to start. I mean, there's different networking events, and just attend and ask questions. And if you don't know too much, just sit back and listen and you'll learn a lot.
Right, right. No, that's fantastic. Now, you do have a business partner now, is that right?
Yes, I do.
How have you guys split up your responsibilities?
Well, I have two business partners in the deal that I closed in Michigan. It was pretty simple. One of them is boots on the ground. So he lives close to the property. So it's really easy for us to delegate and for him to take on that responsibility, which is the inspections, staying in closer communication with property manager, with the insurance person and so forth. Our responsibility was mainly on the capital raise and also doing the back work, the asset management. My responsibility personally was speaking to the brokers, doing all the negotiation with the brokers, with the lender as well, and the attorney.
Gotcha. Okay. That's fantastic. And do you think, because I mean, obviously one of the cool things about this business is that you don't have to have the same partners for every deal, but as you guys have worked together, do you say, all right, this may be something we can replicate?
Oh, absolutely. It was a really good dynamic in our group. We didn't have anyone that was experienced. We all had our coaches, but we didn't have anyone that had a large track record. So we learned as we go. And we kept each other very, very accountable. So I think that really helped us. And I think that was a very good dynamic. And we're looking for the next opportunity. We would love to continue working together. Of course, I'm also doing some local deals here in LA that I'm working with some friends that are local. But that's more to help my residential business. But for out of state, these partners would be the best ones to me.
Or at what point in time do you think you will go from doing residential brokerage and doing commercial to just going all into commercial real estate?
I'm not sure yet. I like what I do. And if I could, I would still do residential. I would do it with referrals because I like my clients. I care about them. So if they refer their cousin, their relative, I want to make sure that they're very well taken care of. But I would continue doing that if on that basis, if I had to choose. And everything else would be multifamily.
Right. There's a lot of attractive reasons for that, which we've covered at length in this show. But yeah, that's fantastic. Mauricio, let's jump here into the final four questions. The first one is,
all right, let's do it.
If I were to give you just $20,000 to invest in real estate with no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
With no previous experience, I would seek a professional, somebody that's already investing. I would try to connect with all my friends to see what they're investing in. If I had no experience, I wouldn't necessarily know where to put the money, but I would talk to people that have already done it.
Gotcha. That's very cool. Question number two is this. If you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
I think the number one mistake would definitely be not networking. I think there's a strong power in networking and education itself. I mean, I listen to an incredible amount of podcasts. I have my books behind me. I mean, if you don't educate yourself, if you're not connecting with people that have the same mentality, you're the one who's staying behind.
Right, right. Absolutely. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one way you are making the world a better place?
I think besides tenants living in better circumstances, I really feel that for the investors, this is a huge win in the sense that we have investors that have worked really hard. They have the money, but they're not able to purchase another property here. So this is a way for them to increase their capital without any liability. And if they continue to do so in 5, 7, or 8 years, well, you know how the numbers work, that amount can increase tremendously without them having any liability. So I think that it will ultimately change their family's legacy. They can have money for their kids' college. They can have money for a vacation home, for retirements. I think in that sense, that's probably the biggest win.
Right. Man, that's awesome. Mauricio, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
The best way to do it would be my cell phone, 714-650-3690. Also my email, which is roqueinvestmentgroup@gmail.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn and Facebook.
Great. And that's Roque, R-O-Q-U-E?
That is correct.
Great. Okay, perfect. Mauricio, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Sam, thank you so much. Thank you for having me. What an honor. Take care.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.